Welcome to the Sacred Feminine Power Podcast, where we explore the many facets of feminine power and why it is so important for women and for men to step into this power in our world at this time. This is Emmy from Feminine Revered, and my magical guest for today is Neil Donald Walsh. Now, Neil probably doesn't need much of an introduction, but just in case there are people in the audience who are not familiar with him and his work, let me share just a little bit. Neil Donald Walsh has written 40 books on contemporary spirituality and its practical application in everyday life, including his new book, God Talk, Experiences of Humanity's Connections with a Higher Power, a book in the Common Sentience book series. Neil is the best-selling author of the Conversations with God series, out of which 7 of the 9 books made the New York Times bestseller list. Book 1 remained on that list for 134 weeks. His titles have been translated into 37 languages and have been read by millions of people around the world. Welcome, Neil. It is such an honor to have you with us.
Thank you. It's lovely to be here with you, and I appreciate the invitation and the opportunity to do so. How may I serve you?
Thank you so much. Well, let's start diving deeper into our themes for today right away. And I would love for you to share with us first and foremost, what makes God Talk, your 40th book, so special and different from your other books?
Well, you know, first of all, it was different because of the way it began, the way it came into form. Normally, when an author has an idea, you know, to write a book, they sit down, they write it, and then they might propose it to some publishers to see if anybody wants to put it out. And that's how I've done 39 of my 40 books. But in this particular case, my phone rang. A publisher was actually calling me. And the publisher said, Neil, would you be interested in writing a book for us, telling people how you have come to your experience of conversations with God and how they might also have the same kind of experience? And I said, well, by golly, I'd love to write such a book. So I did, at their invitation. And I included a 6-step process that I have used in my own life and that I encourage other people who wish to have their own connection with the divine to use in their life as well. In addition, this book contains wonderful stories sent in by members of the general public. That is, the publisher, when they knew I was going to write the book, put an invitation out. They put a call out on the internet asking anybody who feels that they have also had their own direct interaction with the divine to send in their stories. And many, many people did. And the publisher took the 6 or 7 most intriguing of those stories and included them in this book. So the book contains not only a recounting of my own experience of conversations with God, but the experiences of 6 or 7 other people as well, ordinary everyday folks who, you know, are not authors, they're not spiritual messengers of any kind, they're not teachers, they're simply regular people, you know, like you and I, who feel that they've had a direct interaction in their life with the divine. So I think that makes the book intriguing and exciting and different from anything else I've ever produced. So that's what God Talk is. God Talk is not a dialogue book. That is, it's not a conversation between me and God. It's a narrative summary of how anyone can have such an experience. And in fact, it makes the point, Emmy, that all of us really are having an experience of conversation with God. We're simply calling it something else. You know, when people hear from God in their life, and all of us do, by the way, that's one of the first things I was told in my own conversation with God, because I said to God, why me? Why would you choose me to talk to? And God said, oh, Neil, sweetheart, I talk to everybody all the time. It's not a question of to whom do I talk? It's a question of who's listening. So what I've learned in my CWG, I call it a CWG, a conversation with God, what I've learned in my conversation with God is that all of us are having two-way interaction with the divine. Many people pray or meditate or send a message to God, asking for help or asking for guidance or asking for insight. And God responds to every one of those messages, but we simply call God's responses something else. We might call it an epiphany or a sudden insight or a moment of inspiration or an extraordinary idea, or even women's intuition. You know, we give it all sorts of labels so that we don't call it what it actually is, because we don't want to be ridiculed or marginalized by telling people, yeah, God told me this morning such and such. So we, most of us, don't call these experiences conversations with God, even though that's exactly what they are.
Beautiful. I love everything you shared there, Neil. And I'm wondering, why is it that we fear being ridiculed if we share with others that we have had a direct experience of God talking to us? Because all of us, as you said, have, and I certainly have many, many experiences of that as well. Why is it such a taboo almost to share with others that we've had those experiences?
Well, ironically and sadly, Emmy, our religions have made it taboo. Mm-hmm. Most of the world's religions, and by the way, there are over 4,200 religions being practiced on the face of the earth on this day. Mm-hmm. And most of the world's religions teach us that God is not an entity or an essence that talks directly to us. We are told, in fact, that it would be almost blasphemy, heresy, apostasy to tell people, you know, to simply say, yeah, God's talking to me, or God spoke to me this morning. Because we have this idea put in our minds by religion that unless we're an intensely holy person, you know, a sacred person, maybe the Archbishop of Canterbury, maybe the Pope, maybe the chief ulama, maybe the head rabbi, you know, somebody who's at least involved in doing something in a holy way, that unless we have a sacred position in the world, that the average person, you know, God isn't going to talk to, you know, the average person walking down the street. So the reason that many, many people are reluctant to say, yeah, I had a conversation with God this morning, is because our religions teach us not to say such things, not to declare such things, because our religions teach us that God does not talk to everybody, mm-hmm. you know, but only to very, 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 very special human beings.
Yeah, absolutely. And yet God is living within us, and we are living within God, isn't it?
Well, be careful, because you're going to hell if you keep on talking such heresy. Because religion also tells us that if we imagine that God exists within us, that a portion of divinity resides within every sentient being, again, that is apostasy, that's heresy, that's blasphemy. Most religions teach us that we're separate from God, that God is, you know, way out there somewhere, over there, high in the sky or up in heaven or whatever we want to imagine, if we believe in a God at all, and that we are down here, so that God and we are separate from each other. So to walk around and declare that divinity resides within you is another theologically revolutionary statement to make. And while some people are willing to say that, the largest number of human beings are very reluctant to even make that kind of a statement, which, by the way, is why the world is the way it is right now, because we have denied our actual identity as individuations of divinity.
Yeah. Yeah, so very true. And if more of us really just had the courage or even awakened to the fact that we are, each one of us, truly divine, and we live out this divinity on a daily basis, minute by minute, second by second, our world would look very different, wouldn't it?
Yes, if we did live it out minute by minute, second by second. But most of us don't. Even people who acknowledge, even people who have the courage and the bravery to acknowledge themselves as an individuation of divinity, are not living that identity moment to moment and second to second. So your statement, of course, is true. If we did, if we reached critical mass, you know, what sociologists call critical mass, if we reached a certain number of people who believed that, and then not only believed it, but actually lived it minute to minute, yes, of course, the world would change overnight. In fact, the world has changed in many, many, many ways, simply because one or two or five or six or eight or 10 people, I mean, a tiny number of people throughout human history have lived their divine identity minute to minute. We know the names of such people. We call them saints or sages and saviors and gurus and masters. And sometimes we call them actually Lord, because there have been so few of them. So yes, of course, the world would change overnight if even those of us who believe that we are individuations of divinity lived in that way, minute to minute.
Beautiful. Yeah, and as you're speaking there, Neil, what's coming to me really strongly as well is that if we were to accept our own divinity, we would also then automatically accept the divinity of all living beings on our planet and even beyond our planet. And the concept or the notion of separation would become, as you say, overnight, maybe even more quickly, it would become completely void, isn't it?
Yes, we would no longer think of ourselves as being separate from any other living thing, not just other people, but any other living thing, including, by the way, the earth itself, which, of course, is a living organism. So we would feel one with the earth and one with everything on the earth, literally with the trees, with the grass, with the flowers, with the plants, with the animals, with the ocean, with every aspect of life in our physical realm. And once we get a sense of that, once we begin to feel one with everything, we start to treat everything differently. I mean, we literally even treat the trees differently. You know, you're going to think this is kind of weird, but every so often I actually go out and hug the tree. Yes, yeah, I am. I'm a tree hugger. People laugh at it. People say, oh, no, he's part of the woke generation. Neil is a tree hugger. God save me. I should have known. But yes, you know what? I go out into the backyard. We have many trees in my backyard, and one of them is a beautiful apple tree, which brings us wonderful, wonderful harvest of apples every year. And I hug the tree, and I say, thank you. Thank you for being that part of me, which harvests a plethora of wonder for the part of me that I call Neil. And I have a whole different relationship with all of life, with animals, and with, of course, other people, because of my awareness that we are all one, because I've given up the idea of separation, that I'm somehow separate from everything else. So, yes, I'm one of those cosmologists who believes in the unity of all of life. And I've learned to treat all of life, that part of life with which I am in touch daily, I've learned to treat that part of life in a way that I would want to be treated myself. Because I remember the words of someone who was walking around here a couple of thousand years ago, which was not so long ago when we think about it in terms of, you know, the eternal universe. I mean, 2,000 years in the time span of the universe is like the blink of an eye. But the blink of an eye ago, there was this guy walking around saying interesting stuff. And one of the things he said was, do unto others as you would have it done unto you. Because there's only one of us. And when people looked at him and watched what he was doing and how he lived his life, and they were shocked at what he was able to do, he would look at them and say, "Why are you so amazed? These things and more shall you do also." That is, if you believe. "For as you believe, so will it be done unto you."
Yeah, absolutely. I'm also wondering, we were talking about the interconnectedness of all living beings on our beautiful planet and Mother Earth herself being a sentient being, a living, breathing organism. You also, in your earlier books, talk about the concept of highly evolved beings. And I absolutely love this concept and resonate very strongly with it. And I would love for you to share a little bit more about this concept and how highly evolved beings are supporting us in these times of massive change and transition, where there's seemingly so much chaos and confusion and fear on our planet.
Well, I was told in my conversations with God that, of course, there is life elsewhere in the cosmos and in many, many places, actually countless other places, not just one or two. And the universe itself, cosmologists, by the way, this is science now. I'm not even talking theory or concept. This is actual science. Physicists have announced as of about 8 or 9 years ago that they've discovered that the universe, our universe, is really a single aspect of a universe of universes. And so we live really in a multiverse, not simply a universe. And in that multiverse, there are billions and quadrillions of places where intelligent life exists. The Earth is not one of them. This my little joke, because there are not very many intelligent life forms on this planet relative to the total number of people here. So it's my little humor. But in fact, intelligent life is said to exist many, many, many countless places in the cosmos, and in many of those other civilizations, the species have advanced far beyond where humanity now finds itself in their understanding, their awareness, their consciousness, their expression, and their experience of their true identity. So I was told in my conversations with God that we could define these other entities as highly evolved beings. And I'm also informed that not only do highly evolved beings exist elsewhere in the cosmos and have created entire civilizations where there's no war, no anger, no negativity of any kind, no fear, just no negative energy whatsoever. But not only do they exist elsewhere in the cosmos, they have the ability to and have been visiting us here on Earth. That is, they've come by and observed what's going on here on this planet. And I'm informed some of them have actually stayed, that there are highly evolved beings walking among us who are doing their best to bring a new and higher level of awareness to our species, which is a very primitive species here on this planet.
Wonderful. And what is that awareness all about then? What is kind of like the red thread within that awareness that they are bringing through?
I'm sorry, I'm not quite sure I understand the question you're asking. What is that awareness? You mean, what are we aware of?
You were mentioning that these highly evolved beings do even come onto planet Earth and walk amongst us. And their role, in a way, is to share with us a higher level of consciousness or awareness. Would you talk a little bit more about that?
Well, they're sharing with us our true identity. They're sharing with us the truth of the universe, among other things, that we are all one. They're sharing the truth of our unity, that there is only one thing. All things are one thing. There's only one thing in existence, the essential essence, manifesting in differing ways for certain. So there are differences within that one expression. So we call those differences individualities. So, but they are sharing with us the essential truth of life, the unity of life, and the fact that life has empowered itself with the ability to create its own reality individually and collectively. We call this on this planet the power of manifestation. Mm-hmm. So that we are told, the ability to manifest realities, both individually and collectively. We've also been told by highly evolved beings and by others who've walked among us, who are not necessarily highly evolved beings, but members of our own society, have been also revealing to us the largest truth of why we are here, of who we actually are. You know, one of the questions that I've been inviting people when I do a lecture anywhere, I invite people to ask themselves a question at least once in their life and to give it the most profound answer they can think of. The question I invite people to ask themselves is, who am I? I mean, really, who am I? Am I simply a physical entity, like a bird in the sky or a fish in the sea? More complex, perhaps. Okay, fair enough. Maybe a more sophisticated version of a physical entity, but essentially a physical life form. Is that who I am? My body and my mind? Or is it possible, just possible, that I'm more than that? Is it possible that I'm actually a spiritual entity having a physical experience? Is it possible that I am what some religions call a soul? S-O-U-L, and that my soul is simply using my body and my mind as tools, if you please, as pieces of equipment with which to serve and complete the agenda of the soul. Now, if that's really the truth of who I am, if I've actually come to what I would call the physical realm with an agenda, and that my intention is to serve the agenda of my soul, then one would have to ask, okay, fair enough, what is that agenda? Why would a spiritual entity come to this physical realm and move through the encounters that we're all having in our day-to-day life? For what purpose? For what reason? And I was told in my conversations with God that the reason is to turn concept into experience. That in the spiritual realm, Emmy, our souls experience who we are. That is, they know who we are. They don't really experience who we are. I misspoke. The truth is, we know who we really are. We understand who we really are. We understand that we are individuations of divinity. But we do not fully experience that, and for an astonishing reason, because there's nothing else but divinity in the realm of the spiritual. So we've moved into the realm of the physical. We've come, in this case, to life on earth in order that we might encounter that which we are not. Because life on earth creates a contextual field, where that which we are not also exists, which is not true in the realm of the spiritual. All that exists in the realm of the spiritual is constant joy, divinity, love, endless love, unconditional love for ourselves and for everything else, right here, right now. There's not even time. Even time, as we understand it, does not exist in the realm of the spiritual. So we come to the realm of the physical to experience contextualization, where that which is other than what we are and what we intend to be exists. Emma, the example I like to use when I talk about this with people is, let's just use a metaphor. I don't want to speak, you know, outrageously, but just as a metaphor, let's say I am the light. Now, if I know myself as the light, that's one thing. But my soul yearns to experience myself being the light. But in the realm of the spiritual, I'm like a candle in the sun. I'm there all right, along with a billion, gajillion other candles. But I can't experience myself as the light because I'm surrounded by the light. I am part of the light. So in order for me to express, demonstrate myself as the light, I would have to place myself into a space where there is what? Of course, the darkness. And I've done exactly that, which is why I've come to the earth. But masters would say, raise not your fist to heaven and curse the darkness not, but be a light unto the darkness, that you might know who you really are, and that all those whose lives you touch might know who they really are as well. Emma, in a nutshell, that's what every spiritual master has said throughout human history. So on this planet, when we encounter that which we are not, we are invited to bless it, to be grateful for it, and to declare ourselves and demonstrate ourselves as who we are in relationship to that which we are not.
Yeah, you're raising so many beautiful, beautiful points there. And I would love to dive deeper into every single portal that you've just opened there. But let me hone in on the parts that you mentioned a little bit earlier on around manifestation. That is so very important for us in these times of change, because we truly are creator beings. And a lot of us don't really realize that yet. And we can absolutely create for ourselves and for the collective the kind of lives that we are dreaming of living, of creating a heaven on earth in so many ways. And I would love to hear from you a little bit more around the connection between pure love that you talked about, unconditional pure love, and the power for us to manifest heaven on earth.
I think that pure love is a two-word definition of God. It's a brand definition of God for many people, because pure love says that it needs, expects, requires, and demands nothing in return. That is, nothing at all. Dare we believe in a deity who wants nothing, needs nothing, demands nothing from us, who doesn't require us to worship it, to love it, to obey it, who doesn't issue commandments to us and tell us that if we don't obey those commandments, we're going to hell? Dare we believe, dare we embrace such a theologically revolutionary idea? We can't even love the person on the pillow next to us with pure love, much less accept God's love in that same way. Because we have understood, our religions have told us, that our relationship with God is a quid pro quo relationship. That really, our interaction with God is interactional. That we have an interactional love with God. We do what God wants, and God loves us. We don't do what God wants, we disobey God, if you please, and God will condemn us, judge us, and punish us with everlasting damnation. This is the understanding of the largest number of the world's religions. So we have misunderstood the true nature of God. And therefore we act with, now here's what's sad about that, Emma. Because we've misunderstood the true nature of God, we have misunderstood our own true nature, because here we go again. Most of the world's religions encourage us, invite us to emulate the divine, to act as we understand God acts, and that God wishes us to behave in that way. But if we think that God is judgmental, condemning, and punishing, then we will find justification to be judgmental, condemning, and punishing with each other. And that's what we have been manifesting on the face of the earth. If we were to change our definition of God and to declare that God is pure love and would never judge, condemn, or punish anyone, no matter what, then we would lose our justification, the basis of our understanding that allows us to interact the way we interact would be erased. And we would then begin manifesting heaven on earth as we have been invited to from the very beginning. Now, with regard to manifestation, I'm told that we have each, that every individualization in the universe has been given the power to use its own energy, that is to project the energy that resides within us, which is, by the way, pure love, and to project pure love outward from us into every other aspect of our physical life, whatever it might be, in the form of gratitude, in the form of generosity, in the form of compassion, in the form of understanding and forgiveness, in every form that pure love knows how to take, asking nothing in return, needing nothing in return, and certainly requiring and commanding nothing in return. When we move through life with that thought, with that idea, with that intention, with that purpose, we begin manifesting an entirely different reality. Indeed, sometimes a reality that's so wonderful, we can hardly believe it. As I said to God in my conversations, this stuff is too good to be true. What you're telling me here, God, is almost too good to be true. It's like some pie in the sky idea about life and how it could be, a manifestation and what it is about. It's too good to be true. And God said to me in return, sweetheart, sweetheart, Neil, if God can't be too good to be true, who can?
Blessed be. I'm sitting here with the widest smile on my face, just listening to you talk, Neil. And yeah, you have shared, you've literally taken us on a journey into divinity, into pure love, into what it means to be human, and the beautiful opportunity, and I would say responsibility, that we all have in these times to truly step into our power, into our infinite power and our divinity, and truly start to create the kind of world that we want to be living in. Is there anything else, Neil, that is calling to be shared in this moment, either about God Talk, the book, or something else that you or God is wanting to bring through?
I ask God, what is the single most important message that you wish to share with me and that I could share with the world? And God said, I can give it to you in one sentence, one short paragraph. Neil, your life is not about you. Your life is about everyone whose life you touch and the way in which you touch it. But when you understand that and live in that way, you will discover what I call the divine dichotomy. That is, where two seemingly opposing truths can exist in the same space at the same time, because then you discover that, in fact, your life is about you. When your life is focused on your interaction with others and how you touch others, because there's only one of us. And of course, what you do and think and say with regard to another will come back and impact upon you, because what goes around comes around. Neil, it's really quite simple.
It really is quite simple, and we tend to make it so complex and complicated. Well, Neil, thank you so very much for coming on to this show. I really appreciate your time. I really appreciate all the wisdom that you have shared with us. And thank you for so openly opening your heart to us and giving us a glimpse into your thought world, into the world you live in vibrationally, and into the amazing human being that you are. Really appreciate you.
Those are kind words for you to say to me. And of course, I appreciate the opportunity to spend this time with you. And I appreciate all that you're doing to help others come to clarity about who they really are as well. So, ditto, my friend, right back at you.
Thank you so much. That means a lot to me. Now, everybody who's listening, please let's for a moment focus our intention and our awareness on this incredibly powerful energy that's being activated. And imagine sending this energy to everyone and everything on our planet to remember that we are all truly one, and that the more of us have the courage to step into our sacred feminine power and indeed into our divinity, the more quickly our planet will also heal and ascend. Thank you for listening.